Ladies, gentlemen, and others, welcome everyone to today's episode of The Real Deal with Anam C. Today's guest is someone I call a classic media multi-hyphenator. Started out as, I want to say, a journalist because that's how I initially knew her, but of course we'll get more into her journey. Went into the zone of being amongst the first journalists to get into the digital space, has her own platform in that sense as well. And now she also consults with brands on content and PR. Welcome to the pod, Aparna Gupta. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much, Anam. It's such a pleasure to be here.
I feel like you are one of those people who I would say really can do it all, right? Because you do long form content and beautifully so. How long have you been in the journalism space since?
I started out when I was in college. So it's been now, I'm just counting, it's more than two decades.
Wow. And then you, from like hardcore journalism, tell us a little bit of, like, I may know it, but I want the listeners and viewers to also get a, you know, like a glimpse of what your journalism high notes and interests and peaks were.
So it was very interesting. I was a literature student. And in my third year of college, I was actually thinking, what should I do? Because the most obvious choice, I come from a family of bureaucrats. So the most obvious choice was to get into the civil services. But I don't know, I just wanted to do something creative, but I was not so creative to write my own novel, to be honest. And I was just thinking what I can do. And so one of my teachers, professors, she told me that, why don't you get into, you know, writing, in terms of, it doesn't have to be writing a book. Why don't you get into newspapers? And I said that I don't even read news, to be honest. Like, I don't read news. And a journalist seemed like a very heavy, heavy word, you know, like. So she said that, you know, there is something called feature writing as well, which is talking about the positive, or as we say, the sunny side up of stories. So, you know, you talk about, so while everything is a reality, it's just the POV that you choose. So feature writing is more of that. So I started out in Asian Age. I was in the culture section, actually. And then I moved to Times of India, and I was doing entertainment in terms of Bollywood. And I was also covering Page Three parties, which is something I did not really enjoy, because I think it was too late night, and I used to just get tired, I think. And I just, after that, it was just a case of that, okay, I like certain things of writing. What are those things? And I also wanted to create like a niche or a beat for myself. And at that time, when it came to feature writing and lifestyle, right, there was spaces, there was entertainment, and there was food and travel. And none of these things, I was like, I mean, travel, yes, to some extent, but I was not really, I couldn't like relate to any one of them to call it my own.
There was no fashion and beauty?
There was, I would say there was fashion, right? There was no beauty. In fact,
what year are we talking about?
We are talking about 2000.
To paint a picture.
To paint a picture. We are talking about 2004.
Wow. It's almost impossible to picture
a scene
beauty
without
not,
it. Yeah, because at that time, beauty was just like one of the stories in lifestyle pages as such. Beauty was not big. You didn't even have all your Estee Lauder brands come into India at that time. There was only Lakme and Revlon.
Oh, wow.
So that way it was a very, you know, there wasn't so much to talk about it. It's only once that the luxury brands started getting into India, they started looking at India from that perspective, the narrative changed, and there was so much more content around it. So I think coming back to your question, my one of the assignments that, so I was working for Bombay Times, and again, I was not getting a, I don't know if this is the right reason to share or not, but I was not getting a weekend off, right? And I wanted, like, I didn't want to get a holiday on a Monday or a Tuesday. I wanted it to be a Sunday or a Saturday. So then I just went to the HR and said that I don't think I want to continue. It's not working for me. And they said that, you know, why don't you try? And I was working in mainstream newspapers. They said, And I was covering, like I said, people, lifestyle, luxury and all that. And they said that, why don't you, we are starting with a new beauty, like a new beauty publication within our luxury segment. And why don't you shift over to that? And I was like thinking that, okay, writing like 120 pages on beauty, what all can it be there? For how many months can I just keep on taking stuff on beauty? But I just thought that, okay, it's still a beat that I was interested in. And I said, yes, why not? And that's how the whole thing started. It's been like at least 15 years anyway.
Wow. Aren't you glad you said yes to that?
I am so glad. I'm so glad that I said yes to that. And I remember that I had called up my grandfather, and he is not at all into beauty, nothing. And I told him that this is something that has been given to me. And then he said, and I was like, I told him I'm very nervous because I don't know how, if I can take out so many issues and what will I write about. And, you know, what he did was that very sweetly, he sent me a few books on beauty, which meant he sent me a book on Ayurveda. He sent me a book on wellness, and I just read it all.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, that was really sweet, you know. And then I also, what I did was I went to all the, I mean, I'm saying before I took up that assignment, I went and took all the copies of Allure. I took all the international copies just to see what the format was. What is it that people talk about? And then, because, you know, at that time, there was no publication which was entirely on beauty. Right now also, there is, beauty is always a subsection of a lifestyle publication per se.
But you would find references in today's times, right?
Yes.
Like you wouldn't have found references
I
at
wasn't,
that time.
Yeah. So I looked at a lot of international references, but based it on a lot of local or I would say Indian background in that ways.
What's your least favorite thing about how much the beauty content space has evolved over the last two decades? Least.
One of my least favorite spaces is the fact that when I see every content creator has a voice, right? When I say content creator, I also mean like a publication or
of
anything,
course.
Right?
Anything. Any content platform.
Any platform, content platform, I would say. If I see the person not being responsible about the way they use, because the minute you're a platform, you have to have that sense of, I would say responsibility, where you don't nurture a feeling of insecurity in the other person.
But wouldn't you want that for a person as well and not just a platform? Like a blogger should also feel that
absolutely.
Sense of responsibility.
This is my least favorite thing where, you know, I'm saying that the same content can be said in a different way.
Hmm.
Which can be, if you're in a space of beauty and you're talking about being comfortable in your skin, you can talk about it positively.
Yes.
I mean, you know, this is not something which is, I would say, I mean, it's not, beauty, it is something which has a feel-good value to it, and it should have a feel-good value to it, and it should not be on the basis of insecurity.
Yeah.
It could be on the basis of expression, it could be on the basis of inclusion, fun.
Which for such a long time, when it comes to advertisements in the beauty space, have come from a very deep-rooted need to make the potential customer feel insecure, right?
Absolutely.
So editorially, one would hope we can empower the people reading and following and subscribing and watching and listening to not feel insecure,
right? Like you don't have to, like it was a very interesting conversation once I had with someone. Like, see, because for me also, it's not that I started out with this particular thought. It was just been an evolution for me. So, you know, I used to write about how to's and I used to write about, you know, how to banish those things. And, you know, it is a very well-known fact that editorially or content-wise, anything which is negative, anything which is negative will garner more
traffic.
Engagement.
Mm.
See, it is about, if I tell you five things to make your hair grow, just giving you an example, right? As opposed to I say that five mistakes which are leading to your hair loss.
So do you think that sometimes that could be a deliberate effort when it comes to the way the media is today?
I mean, if you want to have, when we are looking at sales, when we are looking at other things, it is definitely a thing. But I think to a large extent, that's where you have the editorial voice and you have the content creator's voice, where they do try to be. And that's how I think they are different from most of the brands. And to some extent, brands are also changing now. And that's why you have the new hybrid brands. If you look at it, a lot of beauty brands, they are very positive in the way they even have the captions.
True.
They have the packaging. You know, a lot of new age founders are very, very, you know, they would probably have like a little affirmation on the flip thing. And, you know, I think they are coming from a very secure place.
And reinstating that force.
Reinstating that thing.
Yeah. I feel like when it comes to both media, beauty, and just this entire world of content and, you know, all of this coming together, I've obviously been in the place, in this space for a lot shorter than you have. But mine has been a very, very digital journey. So I feel like I've noticed, yes, for sure, when a content creator says something that's controversial, it definitely gets them more views, more engagement. And today with what you've said, it makes me kind of go back in my head and think and say, have I been naive? Are people doing this strategically? Going back to the point of sales and views and just having more eyeballs, right? I mean, that's something that so many people, it can be a strategy towards whatever works for you. No judgment.
It is a very, you know, like those are things like, for example, even if you're saying in terms of content, right? If you give something a number, you will see that again works more, right? Like if you say, 8 ways to fix your XYZ or 5 ways to make your skin glow. So what happens is that as a reader, your journey is made easier. So even if one or two things are not working out for you, the other three would be. You're looking, you're going, it's literally like following a map.
But do you feel like the way this landscape is today, do you think that it's better for the customer and the reader today? Or do you feel like because, again, there's this obvious, not saturation, because I keep feeling like there's room for everyone, but there's definitely so many more media platforms today, so many more content creators today, so many more voices, right? Noise, let's just call it noise. Some of it you have to filter out and see what works for you and what doesn't. Do you feel like that has gone in the direction of well or not so well for the end consumer reader? Like, do you feel like it is going to benefit them in the long run? Because when I'm looking at it from your lens, it seems like, oh my God, now the industry is 20,000 fold, right? Whereas where what I've always assumed of it has been a slightly more only digital lens.
Okay, so I would say that content is just an evolution. I wouldn't say it is better or it is worse. It is just an evolution. It is the way it is. Like how people used to read, probably listen to radio first. Then they would read newspapers, right? And there was a time when reading was not considered, like it was, you know, I'm not talking about newspapers, but someone who's reading novels at one particular time, it would be like, oh, you're wasting time. You know, that kind of, so I'm saying, the way one assimilates content. I mean, you know, for all you know, after 10 years, people will be like, oh my God, you know, you're swiping reels. Like, that's so cool. Like right now, what you might feel, oh, this is a distraction and all that. But that's a way, I think the way we are able to assimilate content is much higher than what it was a few years ago. That's also, I feel, the way the whole evolution of content, of generally how things are, has been, right? Now, even if you look at a YouTube video, if you want to, let's say, make a dish, if you want to make a dish, right? If you want a particular thing, don't you want it to be as short as possible? You just want to get a gist and get on with it, as opposed to, let's say, watching a series, which you're doing it just for leisure.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think what depends here is what's the intent of that particular content. Do you want to educate? Do you want to entertain? Or do you just want to engage?
That's interesting. That's very interesting. So where are you consuming and how are you consuming content today? How different is that from how you used to?
Okay, so I consume. Very interestingly, when I had joined Times of India and on the orientation day, and that's what the person over there had told us, that, you know, the future of news will be in unbundling. The reader will be their own editor. So what happens is, as a reader, you have the choice to curate the kind of information that you want. So, you know, while you can say that, oh, you know, I'm getting overwhelmed. I mean, whether to, never has it been easier for you to choose the content that you want. Now, let's say the way I would say is, I read some stuff which is on Google. It's mostly digital, the way I consume information. And the second thing would also be my Instagram feed. So it's a mix of people. It's a mix of interest. It's also, of course, a mix of brands, because I do want to follow. That's, again, something I do it from a point of view of knowing what everyone is doing, right? But I also follow art. I also follow, you know, so it's basically like my own newsletter that I have created, so that when I open my inbox, or sorry, not inbox, when I open my feed, it's something that I like.
I love the line you said, that the reader will be their own editor. Also, somewhere along the course of your journey, you launched Lavender Room.
Yes.
Right? And I want you to tell me a little bit more about that, because I feel like just the idea of having not just your own platform, but you also have writers who contribute towards Lavender Room.
Yes.
So if you want to give us a little bit of a gist on your space.
Lavender Room has also evolved in the last 5 years. So it was, again, when I left being a part of a publication house, as in on the masthead. One of the reasons why I left was that I wanted myself to have a voice. I didn't just want to be the spokesperson for a particular publication. Because also at that time, there were a lot of new homegrown brands which were coming out. There were a lot of interesting founders I was meeting, right? But would they have gone in the traditional realms of publication? Probably not. You would say, oh, you know, do they have the credibility? They are so young. You know, they are not luxury. But my point was that I wanted to kind of make my little effort of, if not educating is too serious a word, I don't want to educate. I would say to make the reader aware of the choices. And that was the reason. I mean, that's the reason why I started Lavender Room, because I wanted it to be a platform on all things beauty and wellness. When I say wellness, I don't just mean spas. For me, wellness, mind, is a very important component, right? Like when I say affirmations, when I say manifest, they're not like woohoo words. You know, I mean, you can work your way with them. And having, I wouldn't say healthy mind, but because that's something which doesn't exist, to be honest. But having a space where you can hold that kind of space in your head for yourself is also a part of feeling, looking, and being beautiful. So that was the whole idea of Lavender Room. And that's also the time when I started my... it is very interesting to mostly promote and talk about Lavender Room. I started my page called Aparna Writes Beauty. I just wanted it like, okay, it has to have something which has the beauty reference to it. It was my name, and it was like, okay, because it was very obvious, like because I was writing on it. I didn't want it only to be Lavender Room, because I was also contributing to different publications. I wanted to have all those things. And I also wanted to have it like a gateway to the different experiences I have. And I always feel that though I've been trained as a writer, I'm more of a visual person. Like if I go for an event or if I go for a thing, the first is not what my ears hear. First is what my eyes travel. And I felt that, you know, like Instagram was like a great platform because I could capture that kind of content. And what social media helped, I wouldn't say helped, like what made me realize was that when you're writing for a publication, you have an imaginary reader in your head. You have a target audience. You have everything in mind, right? But it's someone whom you don't interact with. Sometimes some people will say, oh, we read your article, and, you know, PR people, of course, and all that. But on social media, what I felt was that if you're talking about something, even if it's a story or it's a post, there are people who actually ask you questions. And like, for example, if you're writing for a publication, you're kind of thinking that, okay, my publication, like it's a luxury kind of an audience and it's 18 to XYZ and all that. But when you look at real-time Instagram, this thing, you realize that as much as we want it to be streamlined, it is not streamlined. And that's how it all started. And the evolution of Lavender Room, because I was in touch with so many readers and all that, I realized that if I want Lavender Room to be a space for all things beauty and wellness, your go-to space, I don't want it to be just my voice. I wanted it to be different voices. So if someone is talking about, let's say if I'm giving you an article on curly hair girl, a curly girls, then I would want someone with curly hair to write about it, because I want that kind of relatability. Like if I'm talking about, let's say if there is an article on acne prone skin or what works for acne, I would actually look for someone who has personally gone through that thing.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's just my way of also. And also my thing was that a lot of times people would say that we want to become beauty writers. And for me, it was like, okay, like it seemed very nice, right? Like and they were like, we don't know where to write. We don't know. So I also feel that eventually I want Lavender Room to become like a space where I will edit, I will guide, I'll have a team to do that. But it could be a space where if you want to share your voice, it could be a platform like that.
That's amazing, because I feel like in a time and age where everyone wants to be a content creator, there are very few people willing to mentor, guide, and there are very few people that are willing to offer their platform, right? Which is really rare in general. And I feel like more so when it has to do with credibility and you're someone that would make that perfect package to be able to offer so many people to be able to come and qualitatively contribute towards that.
Contribute, yeah.
Do you often compare the media space with how it used to be to how it is now? When it comes to business, the time we live in is definitely a lot more interesting, because you don't have to be a Condé Nast or a Times of India, or an India Today to be able to monetize from a brand. Is that something, is the business side of it that you find easy to adapt with?
I wouldn't say if it is easy or not. At least it gives you a chance to even try to be that. Because earlier, you didn't even stand a chance. Like if you look at a content creator also, what is a content creator? Content creator is a mini publication house, is a self-independent publication house. Because what all do you have? You have your content team, you have your marketing team. Even if the content creator is doing it all by themselves, they're still looking at all those aspects. When you're talking about the media landscape changing, yes, of course it is, I wouldn't say easier, but at least it's still possible to dream, to be able to stand a chance.
I find it very humbling and also a very gratifying experience. When, you know, I go to an event and I feel like I've been invited along with the editor of so-and-so magazine. And I feel like the fact that today that's even possible, like you said, which wouldn't have been possible if this was 20 years ago.
Yes, you know? And I feel, and I'm so glad that's happening, because sometimes there was this editorial resistance to content creators. Like they would be like,
Oh, that resistance was around for a while.
For a while,
let's
right?
be honest. I was amongst the first creators to, like, I remember begging to, like, be allowed to go to Fashion Week and be invited to Fashion Week. And I would have those FS passes at the back. The fact that I get to sit in front row today, it's taken me, in my experience, it took me about 7-8 years to get there. Right?
But I think it's also because if you look at the whole evolution of media, people also understand, like, you know, like you can no longer be like that highbrow kind of an editor who just comes, walks in and, you know.
I'm going to be honest and say they would be if they could be.
They would be if they could be. But the point is, you can't any longer be.
Yeah. But it's fascinating to me how, and this is no shade to like a specific person, but because you're mentioning how, you know, it's changed. When I look back, the same kind of people who would wonder why a content creator is being seated front row
are now wanting to collaborate with content creators.
Are now content creators themselves. It's very fascinating to me. Like when I look at ex-editors, and I think it's great, first of all. So, like, no shade. But I feel like they jumped the gun on so many of them. Not all of them, but so many of them jumped the gun on their opinions on the content creator space. And I guess they've now seen that there is value to this side of the business.
Absolutely.
And this side of the system. And much like any other industry, there are, you have to filter and you have to pick and choose. Like you said, be your own editor, create your own algorithm of things and
absolutely.
People you want
it
to follow.
It is literally, you know, it really works like an exercise. You can actually see, just see your explore feed, and you want to say that, okay, I don't like what I'm seeing.
Hmm.
Consciously engage with the content that you want to see.
Yeah.
Just do it for 5 days and that will show up.
Yeah. So I love that. If you had to give a tip to anybody out there who is an aspiring beauty writer, whether in the mainstream or the digital realm, what would your advice to them be?
My advice to them would be to not just try the products, right? Like, trying the products is the basic thing. It would also be to read up on not just the, you know, it's not about like, okay, I just try this blush and I pass an opinion on it. Like, learn. If you want to be a beauty writer, right? If you want to be a beauty writer, beauty creator, then I'm talking about. Otherwise, I mean, it's not a hard and fast rule. But you should know the different categories. Research on them. If it's a blush, what is the function of a blush? What are the different types of blush? What are the different textures? Know a little bit of history before you go gaga over one product. Know that, is it like a path breaker? Or is it actually like, the change, or you're just saying it because that's the first product you have tried?
Be more
authentic, be more research oriented. I would say you have that information available so easily. So I would say is that to have a little bit more discerning, because then you have to be that little one up than a consumer. So be a little more discerning about it. You can of course, Google. If you're a beauty writer or if you're a beauty creator, I would really advise you to go and meet as many people as possible. Go and meet the founders. Go and go for the event. Because, you know, mostly over there, not just do you network and all that. That's a secondary part. You get to hear the story from the people who are behind the story, from the makers themselves. And that's why any kind of a event or any kind of a press meet is important.
That's such valuable advice. Thank you for taking us through your journey. Thank you for walking me through this. I feel like you're one of those voices that has stood the test of time clearly and has always been very authentic. I feel like I can, when I'm reading a piece, and even if I haven't seen the byline, in my head it would automatically start to like maybe sound like you.
I'm so glad. That's so
I love your desk updates when you're working on a piece. So when you're sampling, you know, and reviewing and in the process.
That has done so well, Anna. I'm like, you know, I feel that there is no desk influencer. I can totally like sign up for that. So many people say that, you know, they feel so motivated after seeing my desk, and is it always like that? And I'm like, no, it's not. It's just that when I write or when I want to, because I work a lot out of my home, but I can't to settle myself. I need to settle things around me.
It's very motivating, but I inevitably feel like, and I'm quite an organized person, but inevitably when I see your desk stories, it makes me feel like I do not have my life together. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much for talking me through your journey. I think it's been great. And I really hope that Lavender Room, knock on wood, looking forward to see that 10 years from now, even bigger.
Yes, thank you. I hope I have a huge team.
Inshallah.
Inshallah.